Welcome to SoFlow by Lucas Millar. Lucas's latest collection of 13 short stories, ranging from the gross and silly to heart-wrenching thrillers of cosmic proportions. Join Lucas as he takes you beyond the beaches and shows you the dark side of the Sunshine State. Welcome to SoFlow, a collection of weird Florida horror by Lucas Millar. Available January 14th, 2024. Brought to you by the Evil Cookie Publishing. Welcome to another episode of Dead Headspace. I'm your host, Patrick R. McDonough, joined always by my friend, Brennan LaFaro. Say hello, Brennan.
Hello, everybody.
Fortunately, Candace could not make it today. She'll be here next week. We are joined by Red Legault. Say hello, Red.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We got to ask, what got you into horror? Any way you want to take that?
I grew up on it. I don't even know how old I was when I first started watching horror. I was too young to be watching slashers in the 80s, but I was watching them. So that was like my first exposure was, going back to at least 6 years old, maybe even younger.
So and one of your parents into horror as well?
My mom, she introduced me to like Twilight Zone and Alfred Hitchcock Presents. And my older brothers introduced me to the slashers.
That's great. I don't have an older sibling, but I had older cousins that got me into Alien. They started me off on Alien 4. I just remember that one scene where the aliens getting sucked out and I could not touch me for a few weeks. I was like 8 when I saw that. Creeped me out. I wanted more though. I went back. So, Brennan, I want you to take away because I want to talk about the book, but I don't know if you have anything else before that, buddy.
Yeah, let's do slashers. I mean, you said in the 80s, so I mean, you think 80s horror and you get Freddy, you get Jason, you get, post one Halloween Michael Myers. Did slashers as a genre kind of resonate with you and eventually influence your writing, or is it just that was what was big at the time and that's what caught your eye?
I think that is what was big at the time. That was what was being fed to me. I didn't have a lot of choice over what I watched other than Saturday morning cartoons. So if my brothers brought home a VHS tape from Action Video, and it had blood in it, I was watching it. So, I mean, I'm sure it influenced me later down the road. When I was young, I used to do a lot of make-believe, a lot of pretend play alone, and I often pretended to be the final girl.
That's awesome.
I absolutely love the idea of like kid Red Legault, not playing ponies, not playing, anything that you would expect of your 80s child. It's you're pretending to hide in a closet from a slasher. I also kind of dig the idea of even if that wasn't necessarily it was kind of force fed to you, but they kind of bringing you together with your siblings. Is that something that, that kind of bond, I wonder if that carried into family life, when you got older, when you raised your own family?
With my kids, yeah. I did probably try to introduce my kids when they were a little too young to horror. The first real horror movie I think I introduced my daughter to that wasn't like kind of family friendly horror was Poltergeist. And she was pretty young. She was maybe 6 or 7 when she watched that, but I felt like she could handle it.
That's all. Yeah. You know what? It's parents' call. Cause y'all know your kid better than anyone else. I just got to stress that because people that might not be in this circle of ours, with like writers, they might be alone, or know a few, and they might be getting that in one ear, and it's nice to hear that it's up to the parent for each kid.
Absolutely. My son, he doesn't, well, he likes some horror, but he's particular about his horror, and he definitely didn't like it when he was younger, not as young as when my daughter was enjoying it. And so we didn't really let him watch the same stuff that she watched because we just didn't feel like he was ready for it, based on what he showed interest in. So yeah, it's totally individual child parenting, you know, whatever your choice is.
Yeah, I mean, I started watching it when I was way young, but on accident I saw Stephen King's It, the 1990 Tim Burton, and not Tim Burton. His last
Curry.
Name's Tim Curry's.
See, I knew what you meant too. I didn't even register that you said Burton.
They're pretty much the same guy, right? They play in the same sandbox. But anyways, I saw that as a kid. That creeped me out. Stephen King scarred the kids in our age group, 80s, 90s kids with clowns.
No Brennan, one creeped me out was Chud. Did you ever see Chud?
No, but I know there's still a huge fan base for that one. Crystal
that
Lake.
One terrified me.
Crystal Lake put out an anthology about based on Chud a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Yep, I remember that. I wanted to write something for that, and I never got around to it.
Yeah, that seemed cool. I actually got a comment from Ron Kelly. For those that don't know, Red wrote a book with her and, I mean, sorry, him and Laurel Hightower, and they came up through Crystal Lake. But this is what Ron said. Just tell her that I said howdy, and that it was a pleasure and honor working with her on The Devil's Backbone. I think her novella, The Gatherer, is some of the finest work. Doing this collection with her and Laurel was a highlight of my career. That says something. He's been doing it since the late 80s, or sorry, mid-80s? That's cool. I just
Ish.
read that.
Yeah.
I was waiting to talk to you until I opened that to read it, but how does that make you feel?
That I have no words for that. I don't.
You're a writer.
That's
writer
pretty amazing.
Edit
I know.
It.
Highlight of your career. I don't think he realizes how much of a sham I am.
I bet he'd feel that way about himself because he like looks up to Richard Matheson, and I'm sure in his
God.
Head.
You know, it was great working with Ron and Laurel. They are kindest people. They're so easy to work with. There was never any butting heads. If we had ideas, we bounced them off each other, and it was great. Like I had no issues working with them, and it was just a real pleasure.
That's cool. So it's just like when you think of writers, before I started really writing, diving into, you know, Twitter book world, I just thought it was a lonely process, but like you kind of learned that it's cool. It's like a party. And in your case, you got to work with two friends, have fun, and make something that others can enjoy out of it. Like that is so cool. That's a cool side of social media. Brennan, do you have anything to say about Ron in regards to
You know, I definitely wanted to dive into this book. I just finished it this morning, and it was a blast. And the, I don't know, blast is appropriate because it's, it's dark as hell, especially
you sick bastard.
But one thing that really interested me about the process of this book is the whole Crystal Lake series, where they invite three authors to put in novellas on a given theme. It's a really cool idea, but I don't feel like I've seen any group approach it quite like the three of you did, where there was a little bit more collaboration. And you almost wrote what feels like a mosaic novel. So I wonder if you could walk us through kind of like, and I know that you, that it was initially Ron and Laurel, and I think it was James Newman, and you came on when James had to back out. But I wonder if you could take us through kind of the planning process, how you worked out who was going to take each timeline and how you, you know, worked together to connect your stories.
Well, I got the email from Ron Kelly and from Laurel asking if I wanted to be part of it, because Ron had kind of created this fictional mountain range that runs through Tennessee and the very westernmost part of Virginia and Kentucky. And each author was from the state that the story was going to be set in along this mountain range that was kind of inherently evil in a way. And so since I was from Virginia, they invited me, and they hadn't written their stories yet when they approached me, and they said they had this idea. Each story was going to be set in the same universe. And that's all we knew. And then he kind of gave me an idea of what he was going to write, and Laurel had her idea already. And based off of what they had, Ron's was in the late 1800s, like around 1870s, I think. And Laurel's was the 1930s during Prohibition. And I thought, well, why not just do another 50 years later? And it'll be a little 50-year increments. And so I set mine during Vietnam, or the, you know, toward the end of Vietnam. And that's about all we had to go off of, other than a general idea of what the characters were, or who the characters are going to be, and the time that it was set, and kind of a general storyline. And then we just kind of went with it. And then when we were done writing, we read each other's stories, and then we tried to tie in the stories if we could, even if it was just a little nugget of a sentence here or there, just to make them connect a little better.
And I think that little bit goes a long way toward that kind of interconnectedness, because it makes the difference between, again, like it almost borders on a mosaic novel as opposed to more of a collection. Mm-hmm. Now, you touched on this a little bit, but the overarching theme, besides, you know, Ron's haunted mountain range, is Appalachian horror. And for people who might have no idea what that means, you know, what are some of the characteristics of that, you know, area of the country that lend themselves so well to horror?
Well, so I mean, the Appalachian Range is massive. It goes all the way from what, Alabama up through Canada. But when you think of Appalachia, or Appalachia, as they say in the region, when you think about that area, like Appalachia, not necessarily the Appalachian mountain range, you think kind of southern mountains, you know, mountain people, rural, woods folk, you know, banjos playing, that kind of seclusion and small town horror is what usually comes with Appalachian horror. Sometimes it's the folklore of the region too comes into play.
Yeah. And you know, I think of like mountain magic. And when I say those words, I hear them in Ron's voice. But the way that kind of folklore was the word you used, it's so interesting. It's almost like this mythology that is, I don't know if I would say it's not widely known, but I do know that most of my knowledge of it comes from, you know, reading Ron Kelly and other authors who live in that area and kind of make it a pretty substantial portion of their work. So it was kind of cool for Crystal Lake to have to feature you guys and have that just little part of the world showcased, I suppose.
Yeah, that was fantastic. So I think how it went, and I hope I have the story straight. I think Crystal Lake reached out to Ron and asked him if he was interested, and that's what he chose. He chose to do Appalachian horror, which makes sense because that's completely in his wheelhouse. I don't think I've ever done it before. I've had some stories kind of set in the mountains, but I don't know if I ever kind of considered them Appalachian horror, but I guess they could be.
Patrick, if it is okay with you, I want to steer us toward In Excess of Dark.
Yeah, I was waiting. Me too.
All right. So, Red, I'm going to ask you to give us kind of the back cover 2-minute pitch, because you'll explain it better than we ever could, and we will probably spoil something important. And then, Patrick, I'm going to throw it to you.
I'm the worst at pitches, and I even wrote a back cover thing. but, okay. So, In Excess of Dark is about a grieving woman who suddenly finds herself with the ability to make her most horrible daydreams come to reality. And it's about her struggling with her recent loss. And during all this, she's kind of seeing this weird shadow figure, and she's trying to make sense of it all. And she tries to do everything in her power to bring her loved ones back.
Patrick, dive in, sir.
Yeah, so when I read it, I felt there were a lot of twists and turns. Like, I thought I knew which way it was going. And it was cool, because for me, the only writer that can really, like a current name that popped up was Paul Tremblay, because there was a lot of for me, the ending was like kind of fill of ambiguity. Can't say that word right. And maybe that's not how you intended to write it, but like I reread pages and I'm like, I'm pretty sure it goes this way, but I can also see it playing that way. I mean, very vague, because I want people to read this and not, I want them to go in blindly. But I felt for her, you know, to see what's coming and what you did at the end with how she deals with it and then deals with her real demon, so to speak. The whole thing was just, you're a great writer. That's really
Oh.
all. I don't know how to say it in an
Thank
eloquent
you.
way, so I'll just say you're a damn good writer.
Thank you.
It was dark, man, and like I like
Yeah.
that, because it helps me when I'm, you know, dealing with some shit for my life, and that's where people like us tend to typically go, like read darkness, so it's not so lonely. So thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for reading. I had a lot of fun writing that one.
Did your husband read it? Like, I don't know if he's a
No,
reader or.
no. He used to read everything I write.
Yeah.
But then I kept writing and writing and writing, and I continued doubling it in
It's
front
a
of
long
him.
commitment to keep
I did,
up.
well, I stopped asking. He's going to
I
read this one. I'm gonna send it to him. He's not home right
would
now.
love to know his thoughts on it.
I think he'd like it. I don't know. He can handle some dark, weird shit.
Just the
So.
psychology, because like my wife doesn't really read a whole lot of like this genre, but like maybe there, because what I put out there is kind of like not up her alley, but maybe one day there will be. I'd be interested to know what her thoughts are. Like, you know, partners, I like to know how they view their creative's work.
Yeah, he's very supportive,
That's the most important
and yeah,
thing.
he's very supportive. Early on, when I first started writing, I'd give him everything I wrote, and he would give me feedback, and I would get mad. So
I
I would
was the
get
same
so
way.
mad,
I know. I
and I was
get
mostly mad because he was right, and it kind of pissed me off. But it's
it.
fine
I
because
can
I don't get
relate.
angry over anybody else's feedback. I will accept feedback readily. I welcome feedback. But from him, it was, I don't know, I couldn't handle it, so
Can I ask? No, just tell
I
me you love
stopped
it.
giving
Just
him
tell me you
feedback.
love it.
So I
I gotta
got to
ask
a
if.
point where I'd like just give him a story. I'd say, this has already been accepted, just read it and tell me you like it.
I gotta ask if this is why you feel that way, because I'm like that with Tara too. And for me, I feel like the only explanation is because I value her opinion more than like anyone else's. Is that kind of what it is like with you and your husband?
Yeah, and also, I mean, I just want unconditional affection. I don't want any I don't want any negative comments from my husband.
I totally get that.
No, and when he has given me feedback, it was never bad. It was always, you know, he'd point out very obvious things that needed work, and I just didn't like accepting it.
Was like that for the first year or two. I get it.
Yeah.
How about Brennan? I've never heard this side. Have you?
Have I what?
With your wife, like, had she, I don't know if she's
Has
read.
she read anything?
Yeah, we've never really talked about it.
She's read 5 books, and it's the Slattery Falls trilogy, and she's read the two westerns. And truth be, I mean, my stuff is not as dark as this book, and it's, you know, the characters are a little lighter, if you will. So I mean, it's, if I wrote something like this, she would not read it. I do have one book she hasn't read because I don't think she'd like it as much. So I mean, she's not a horror person, so it's, they were also edited and published by the time she read them, so it was very much a, just tell me they're great, like, it's, you know, it's fine, don't point out plot holes, please.
Brennan, I want to hear like the first thought you got about this book, because me and Brennan talked about this before he came on, and I just want to hear.
No, before I do that, you know, I will throw out there that, you know, we all know that as a writer, you have to have thick skin, and you're going to get reviews that are less than glowing, and sometimes you're going to get tagged in said reviews that are less than glowing, and you have to just kind of be that bigger person and not respond. But I totally get that, like, there needs to be, you know, that affection, as you put it, from somewhere. And so I totally get that, you know, having that one person who just says, you know what, you fucking rock, you know, you're awesome, and you knocked this one out of the park. That said, Patrick, you're right. Dark is the word for this one. And putting, you know, Eric LaRocca on the cover blurb, there is that kind of similarity in the willingness to go there. And, you know, we had made a post earlier about, you know, if you would like to ask Red a question, post it here. And Red, you came up with some great questions, and I said I was going to steal them, and I was not kidding. One of the things you posted was, how do you harness the darkness? And I think that's a great question for this one, because I have to imagine that there are, you know, very authentic and real fears that are buried in the pages here. So how do you harness the darkness?
Yeah.
Behind closed doors. Yeah. So a lot of the fear. So this is very heavily a grief horror novella. And I think everybody can kind of connect with grief horror simply because it's a fear that everybody has. Nobody ever wants to experience grief, but everybody will experience grief at some point. And so one of my biggest fears is losing my loved ones. And sometimes my imagination runs away with itself, like it does with many people, and you worry, like your kid's a few minutes late getting home, and then they're half an hour late getting home, and then they're not answering their texts. So where are they? What happened? And then your mind takes you on this horrible journey of what could have happened. And so those fears are just always there. And so with this book, I took some of those fears and just sat alone in the darkness with them and explored worst case scenarios.
I have to tell you, and it's a weird one, but my biggest fear from this book is mismanufactured plastic forks. Like, for some reason, it's so far from the most terrible thing you wrote in this book, but at the same time, it's I remember being a teenager, seeing the Jackass movies with my friends, and being able to sit through the whole thing, watching people get hurt, but having to look away from the one where they get like paper cuts between their like fingers. And it's that. It's absolutely that. Where the hell did you come up with that idea?
I used to work in a plastics factory. Yeah, fresh out of high school, I worked as a plastics inspector. And I used to have to check for things like flash. We did not manufacture forks, but we manufactured a bunch of other stuff. And if they got that ridge of flash on it, a lot of times we had to reject it. And there have been times when I've pulled out a plastic fork and saw that there was flash and thought, how the hell did this happen?
Pitiable inspectors at that factory.
Yeah.
That was so specific, too. I had that question, like, did your parents or someone, you know, I didn't know if you worked there. I had no idea.
Yeah.
That was that like a big thing in whatever town was near you? Was that like a big company there?
Yeah, there was a plastics factory in the one stoplight town that I grew up in.
I got you.
That's where I went to work.
Okay.
Yeah.
Neat. Brennan, without spoilers, what did you think of the ending? Do you agree that it was like ambiguous? Because I feel like you could go in as a reader and feel the complete opposite of me. Like, some endings are like that. And I think this is one of them. What's your thoughts?
No, I think your read on that was, I definitely had a similar one. And I love stuff like that. The idea that, you know, like I think of something like, let's say, the Sixth Sense, where you get a twist ending, but it's a pretty definitive twist ending. So you go back, you watch the movie, you notice stuff, and you get a different read on it the second time. But I love those types of stories where you're still thinking about it at the end, and it's, you have the clues, you have, you know, you've been led in a certain direction, but you haven't been spoon-fed exactly what it is. That's a piece of art you can revisit countless times and at different points in your life and kind of have different reads on. And you know, Patrick, you mentioned Paul Tremblay does that well. You kind of bringing it up and making that comparison, I'm not sure I would have done it, but then you said it and I'm sitting here nodding my head. So that's how I took it, whether or not that's how you intended it. Sorry, it's out of your hands. It's out in the world. Readers are interpreting it their way, even if that's wrong.
Well, I know. So I'm okay with people being unsure. And I knew that it that some people would walk away not quite knowing. But I know. But I'm not gonna tell anybody.
So the breadcrumbs are there, and you know what's happened, and that's, you know, that it generates discussion. Now, a lot of your work up to this point has either been self-published or put out through your Death Knell Press. What made this the right project to shop around and put with Dark Lit? And I like to think I know the answer to this question, but how has it been working with Dark Lit?
So this book, I wasn't sure. I didn't think anybody would be interested in it, to be honest, because it's so weird. And I just went full throttle. Like I went everywhere that I thought I shouldn't go, but as I was writing, it felt like that was the direction it needed to go as I followed the character and it's just the way it ended up. But everything that I wrote felt true to the creative process. But when I was done, I had this book and I was like, nobody's gonna fucking like this. Like, this is not gonna go over well. But I was happy with it. And so I shopped it around a little bit. I sent it to a few places and then Dark Lit was one of those places because they were opening up for novellas. And yeah, and I got an acceptance within probably within a month after sending it. So Andrew's been great. Andrew with Dark Lit Press has been great. He even said, "Look, I know I'm new, so if you have this other places and you're waiting on a response from them, I don't mind waiting, if you want to go another route." But I was okay just taking the plunge with Dark Lit.
Yeah, and you know, without going too much into detail, like he is very, very good about that. It's nice to see a publisher that, like, with every action does put the writers first. Wants your success over, you know, over his royalties. And it's very clear. And you know, he put it up on NetGalley, and I know you got a lot of good early responses that way. Patrick, before I leave this, do you have anything else you'd like to add?
No, just about Andrew or just in general?
In general, about the book.
I don't know. I've known Andrew for like a year or two before he started his press, and always thought he was a sweetheart, nice person, someone you could trust. You can't trust every publisher. And I think that is something that's not advice I ever heard until I dove into this, but you know, I think that's worth knowing. You can't even trust every publisher. You gotta, you know, read over the contract or get someone. You don't know. I bring that all up because Andrew, he actually takes care of you, like they said. I got no horse in the race. So that's been my experience with him for like 4 years.
Yeah, very true. You do offer the unbiased opinion. So
I can't even tell
a
if you're
lot of
joking or not.
no, that it's I mean it's factual. You
Oh, okay.
it's unbiased.
What over my head, man.
Red, a lot of the stuff you've put out in recent years, really focuses around that short fiction, and then you have this being novella length, and you also have a novel out later in the year. To you, what's the difference and what's the draw between writing short fiction, kind of short fiction, and novel length stuff?
I love short fiction. I like reading short fiction because I can get a whole story in just one sitting. I can sit down for a couple hours you know, and have a decent short story by the end of the week. If I put in an hour here or there throughout the week, and then I have something I could submit. So I do like the semi-instant gratification of being able to write a full story. And I like the challenge of getting everything in a very short space and just cutting everything out. The challenge for me, so novellas, if I think the story has enough material, I'll easily like pop it into a novella. I really enjoy doing that, but novels are hard. Novels are really hard for me because I write fast. I like my scenes to go really, really quickly. I like the page turners, not necessarily action, but you know, just there's just constantly something happening, like making me turn the page. And so I tend to write that way too. And so with novels, I have to slow down and like put some more in there.
In your novel, and you do have, it's Bloodstains by Gaslight. It's coming out with Bridget's Gate in a couple months in June.
It's going to be a little later than that.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you write a novel, you do slow it down. Cause I find that, you know, I love the novella form. And when I go to novels, basically I'm turning a 500 page idea into a 300 page book because I do like that novella style pacing. What steps do you take to kind of force yourself to slow down without, you know, losing the reader and sacrificing the pacing?
So I won't expand an idea to make it a novel.
Mm-hmm.
But if I have, this is why this is like, so I've only written one other novel, but it's no longer on the shelves. I took it down. It's called Fairhaven. It was my first published novel. It was a zombie apocalypse story. And that I had plenty of material. You know, I had a big story. And so that one came out of me pretty easily. But it's just about taking more time in every scene to get to know the characters and have more things happen, you know, more exciting scenes to happen. For Bloodstains by Gaslight, it's a pretty decent size story. There's I might say decent size. I mean, for me, it's going to be about a 60,000 word novel. So nothing huge. This isn't
nothing to sneeze at though.
But I think the story is just bigger. So it's not necessarily dragging it out. I'm not slowing down scenes so much that it becomes kind of a lull or a drag. There's just more material to cover for the story.
That's interesting. Brennan, I felt like you were going to reply. I don't want to cut you off.
Oh, no, I thought I was waiting for you. So can you give us a little kind of tidbit of what we can expect in that book?
In Bloodstains by Gaslight? That is about an 18-year-old girl who's still in high school, and she's in a relationship that is becoming abusive. And right when she is about to dump him, he turns into a vampire and traps her in a life of horror. So it's not the romantic kind of vampire. He's a monster. It's a story about teen relationship violence and abuse, but it's told through the lens of a vampire story.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe I saw that it takes place in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the kind of renaissance we're going into. I've seen a couple of these, you know, Tim Meyer has his Malignant Summer, that are coming of age stories that take place in the mid to late 90s. Cause you know, we all have our favorites that take place in the 80s and we have that nostalgia, but let's face it. I mean, like when in, you know, 1985, I was not cognizant. when I was a teenager, it was, you know, the late 90s, and that's the period of time that I kind of remember the music, remember the pop culture, remember fondly. And it's just so cool to see horror stories that are focusing on that, you know, growing up adolescent, whoever, but that take place in that time period that I'm so familiar with. Did you kind of infuse it with pop culture to have fun with it, or is it just kind of how did you go about setting it in the late 90s, I guess?
I did not put enough late 90s in there. I'm working on edits now to get some more in there because I kind of got caught in my own headspace with kind of the main plot of the story and forgot to put a lot of those 90s pop culture things in there. So I'm working on edits now and adding more to it. Music,
Nice.
music, clothing. I was a huge fan of like button fly wide leg jeans with like Skechers
Jinko.
and yeah. I had some knockoff kind of Jankos in around the year 2000, but not in the late 90s. They weren't quite that wide leg. Yeah,
Yeah,
cause I
that
graduated in 97. So I'm pulling a lot from my youth.
I am both amazed and embarrassed that, we were walking around in JNCOs at some point. Looks like you're wearing like a pair of like Mario pipes on your legs. Listening to Limp Bizkit, and I mean, I remember it fondly because I didn't have to pay bills, but at the same time, that was there's some stuff that I you could forget. Patrick, I'm gonna throw it to you, buddy.
Yeah, so Red, I don't know if you were joking with all of them, but like with your question, it's kind of funny, some of them that you were presenting. Brennan, were you th Brennan, were you thinking of actually reading them? Because I was.
I wrote down a couple.
I can't remember what I
Go
wrote.
for it, sir. You
Oh,
gonna
my
ask her
turn.
to recommend a telescope? Because I did have that
Oh,
one in there.
yeah.
Now I'm trying to pull it up. It ain't coming up.
Recommend
It's
here. I
embarrassing.
recommend this telescope. Whatever.
Brennan, which ones do you have written down? Help me
Well,
out.
I mean, tied in with that, if you'd like to recommend a telescope, by all means, but I'm kind of curious because I don't think,
I have it
two
behind me.
hundred and thirty. Well, we don't know what that is. We don't know what the benefits of that is. What I'm getting at is like in 230 odd episodes, I don't think we've ever been able to ask somebody how a kind of passion for astronomy, if it ties into their writing and how so. So go ahead and recommend us a brand and tell us about how that works.
It does tie into a lot of my writing. I don't think there's not much of it in Excess of Dark, but there is in The Gatherer, which was part of the Dark Tide series, and it will also play in a little bit in Bloodstains by Gaslight because the high school girl has a passion for astronomy. As for recommending a telescope, that would have to be its own episode because there's a long
It's just
discussion
not that
because
simple.
it's not that simple because you have to have what I always tell people when they ask what telescope should I get, I tell them you should get the one that you're going to use, and that depends on what you want to see and what your capabilities are and blah, blah, blah. It's a long story. So
I love
how
how
does one
much you love astrology. It's so
feel free
cool.
to message me anyone if you have questions about telescopes. I'll try to point you in the right direction. I'm not an expert. I just like them.
How does one get involved in that hobby? Like, what drew you to that, I suppose?
Like horror, it's just always been there. I grew up on the outskirts of a small town, so we had good dark skies, and I've always been interested. I've just always looked up. I remember seeing my grandpa going outside at night and just staring up, and so I'd go out there too and just stare up with
That's cool. That's something that a lot of people in this country, cities mostly, I would say, don't realize. They're stuck in their own world. And you just said it ever since you can remember, you were always looking up because it's interesting. But where a lot of us are stuck in, whatever the stupid crap is that they're stuck in, not stars. So I think that's cool. I love Neil deGrasse Tyson too. That guy, I've read only one of his books, but it made me feel dumb. I'm like, I
Oh.
know he dumbed this
But
down for like layman to
he
understand,
didn't do
or
it enough.
no, I got it, but I'm like, it means so much more, but my brain can't understand it.
I have one of his books. I haven't read it yet, though.
Brennan, talk so I can pull up the title.
I mean, it does seem like staring up into the sky is tantamount to asking all of those like those big questions. Why do we, where do we, how do we? Patrick, I don't think anybody cares about the title, so I'm going to skip that.
Well, I got it. So I'm going to say it's Astrophysics for People in a Hurry.
That's fabulous. Oh, okay. Nobody cares.
You're in a hurry.
I mentioned Death Knell Press earlier, and you have put out a collection through them, but you also put out an anthology through your press. What kind of, because I don't, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think you did Dismal Dreams and Lucid Screams through that. What prompted you to kind of start that label?
So, I mean, there are a lot of things going on when I decided to launch Death Knell. But originally I was self-publishing through my imprint, which was La Red Books. The first book I ever released was through La Red Books, but I was using my legal name, which is not Red. And so when I started writing horror, I started thinking, you know, I should probably change my imprint to something that's a little more suitable. But also at the same time, I was considering trying to pitch an anthology idea. I really wanted to edit an anthology. I wanted to do a Nightmare Sky was the idea. And so I wanted to do that. But I love making books. I love the whole process of making books. I love writing them. I love doing the art. I like formatting. I even like the publishing side of it. And so I figured since I needed a new self-publishing imprint anyway, and I really love doing it. And this was right around COVID. And so I was hoping maybe a little extra money. I wasn't expecting much, if anything, but you know, that would have been a bonus if a little extra money came in too. And so I decided to launch Death Knell. It was kind of it wasn't a stupid decision. I'm not going to say stupid, but it was a passionate decision because we're at a point where I was in my 40s when I launched it. I'm still in my 40s, but I was at this point where I hadn't done any of the things in my life that I thought I wanted to do because I was always too afraid or we were always broke. You know, we never had enough money. And so I just never did them. And so with Death Knell, I got to this point where I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. We had this major house emergency. Our plumbing had to be dug up from under the cement. It was a $14,000 job that we had to take out a loan for, which meant I couldn't take out the loan from a small business. Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. And so I almost didn't launch it. It was awful. I almost didn't launch it. But then I decided to just do it anyway. I had a little cash set aside for the project. And so I had enough to pay the authors. And that's all that mattered to me. As long as the authors got paid, I'd figure the rest out.
See, that's true. But that's true love and passion right there. For real. Yeah. Like, you're not going to do that unless, like, you're a lifer. Because if your heart ain't in it like yours, then what's the point? It sounds like a lot of work, but what's the payoff? Let's hear that end.
The payoff? I like doing the work. Yeah. I mean,
does it make you happy?
Sometimes
though?
When like it gets down to the wire, it's really stressful, but yeah. I do like doing the work. I like publishing people. That's awesome. A great feeling because I know it's a great feeling to get published.
Yeah.
So that's the payoff. I'm not making much of any money at it yet. Maybe down the road, but that wasn't really the main reason why I launched it. It's kind of a passion project.
Nice.
So, I mean, tied in with that, you like publishing people and we writers, we like being published. It's really a win-win all around. What was your editing experience like from, you know, running submissions to reading submissions, you know, acceptances, rejections, actual editing, compiling? Just everything.
I had fun with all of that part. That was my favorite part. I loved getting submissions. I read so many stories. I read 250 something stories about the night sky, and it was amazing.
Did it give you a new fun. Like? Did any of them give you a new way to look at, you know, up?
Oh yeah, yeah. All the ones that are in the book. Every single okay.
That's a great answer. I was a contributor.
Very fair.
I was blown away by all, and I was blown away by double what ended up in the book. I had 120,000 words worth of stories that I absolutely wanted in that anthology, and I just didn't have the money to pay all the authors, so I had to cut it down to about 60,000 words. Yeah, so that was hard.
Would you, if you were able to, with whatever that means, would you do it? Would you do another one?
Yeah, I mean, if by some miracle all their stories were still available 2 years later, cool. I would, yeah, and I'd probably love to reach back out to them and get those stories because they were really good. There's a few that I still think about today and I regret not putting in. Yeah,
that's funny. Is there anything about In Excess of Dark that we didn't cover that you would like to just bring up to potential readers?
Well, it's horror. It's and it's really dark, and there, I mean, there's a content warning that if you're not in a good headspace mentally, because it dives into a lot of suicidal ideations and dark thoughts about loss and grief. And so if you're not in a headspace to deal with that, maybe wait a little while.
You know, I'm sorry to cut you off, but Brennan, I want to hear if you thought of this too. It really, parts of it, I can talk about this as a specific soft here if you want, but I don't want to ruin any details for people that haven't read it yet. Parts of it remind me of Laurel Hightower's Crossroads. Like with the, and I don't want to ruin her story either, just with the grief, with the aspect of it being a strong woman protagonist. And, you know, it's interesting because last episode we talked with Drew Huff and we dove into an aspect of a loss from a loved one that isn't talked about much, and that's anger, you know? And you kind of did that too, and Laurel did that too, and it's really well executed stories. Brennan, do you feel that there's a resemblance to those two stories? Did you kind of feel
I wouldn't
that
have
way
pegged
too?
Freeburn, but
No, not Freeburn, Crossroads and In Excess of Dark.
Oh yeah. And I think that it even, I think on the book cover somewhere it says Crossroads meets and I'm forgetting the other title, but
it was Final Destination.
Yes, exactly.
It was more about that inability to escape. Mm-hmm. It's the thing you can't escape.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, I think that is the certain. Obviously, if it made the book cover, then yeah, Crossroads is absolutely an apt comparison.
I originally pitched it, like when I was pitching it to publishers, I pitched two books. I pitched Laurel Hightower's. I pitched it as Laurel Hightower's Crossroads meets, or I pitched it as the grief, the exploration of grief, like Laurel Hightower's Crossroads meets the snowball into weirdness, like Things Have Gotten Worse Since We Last Spoke by Eric LaRocca.
Oh shit, yeah.
So I kind of compared the way his book starts, and then it just gets fucking weirder and weirder as it goes. That's how I pitched it.
I found it really interesting how not the specific fear, but like as a parent, I think I talked about this, I can't remember if it was on or off air like 2 weeks ago, but about how being a parent, like, thank God I got some way to output this stuff, because like, if not, it'll build up, similar to In Excess of Dark, you know, it'll build up, it'll pressurize, and it'll eat you alive. Which I love that message, that you kind of have towards the end, that she finds her. Nope. I'm not going to say that. That'll ruin it. Oh man. But
it's really hard to talk about this book without spoilers.
Hey, did I get any of you to buy the book yet? No, try looking it up. Get it. It's really good.
This is not live, so yeah. You will not get feedback. Yeah.
I know, I was making a joke. Okay. So yeah, I don't wanna just jump to the outro section. Is there anything else that I may have cut you off on, or maybe when you talk about with In Excess of Dark, or anything else that you would want to throw out there?
No, not that I can think of. I think we covered a bunch of it. In Excess of Dark comes out Friday, March 15th. So it came out Friday, March 15th. by the time this airs.
That's 2 days from now, recording wise. That's crazy. It's so
Mm-hmm.
soon. It is a good month for published books being published. Brennan, where can people? No, I'm gonna ask Red first. My bad. Red, where can people follow you? Sorry about that.
You can follow me at Red Lego across most social media platforms. I'm primarily active on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I have a Threads and a Blue Sky. I don't really use them that much, but I'm there. And I have a TikTok too, and that's just embarrassing. So
And I believe it's getting banned anyway. So
probably.
more on that in the coming weeks. I think something happened today. I don't know.
I did see Pelosi say that, and this was on TikTok. She was saying how like we're not trying to, it's not about banning TikTok, it's about making it better. And then she said tic-tac-toe. We win. Something like that. I'm like, so that's so
Fabulous.
stupid that it's not gonna leave my head. Yeah, Brennan, where can people follow you?
Brennan LaFaro on all the stuff. Actually, Red, there is one more thing I want to throw at you. Shout out the cover artist because it's this really in your face, striking and vivid cover art.
Yeah, cover art was done by Ben Arrington. I was really happy Andrew found him. He had this post that he was looking for work, and so Andrew reached out, and this was like one of the first ones he came up with.
Nice.
What's this? Yeah,
Yeah.
came out great.
Fit, fits
He
the
gave me
story,
a different
absolutely.
colors to pick from, but I really like that red magenta fuchsia kind of color with the green.
This might have just been totally obvious from the beginning, but did you kind of wrote like a psychedelic horror, in my opinion, thinking about it now after looking at that cover, which makes it perfect.
Yeah, so I really liked the cover because I mean the mountains are sideways and she's upside down but upright, and so everything's just kind of turned the wrong way, which I thought was really symbolic of what's happening throughout the story.
It reminds me of Gwendolyn Keith's Reluctant
Reluctant
Immortals
Immortals.
covers. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's really cool. You can follow me at PR McDonough, show at Deadhead Space, most platforms. Same thing. Blue Sky is not really. We're there, but it feels
Nobody
like
else
we're,
is.
yeah, it just feels like we're in an empty room. So, Red, do you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, keep reading horror or just read whatever you feel like reading.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I'll go then, you Brennan. Final thoughts are thank you for coming on. You've always been super easy to talk to. You're a great writer. You're always welcome here. I know that Candace is bummed out that she couldn't talk to you, so like I think contractually obligated to come back. Just talk to Candace and we'll be there to listen.
Yeah, I'm sad I didn't get to see her tonight. It was great being here. I haven't talked to you guys in a long time.
I mean, we,
Brent, I
yeah.
don't know if I've spoke with Brennan before. I'm not
It
sure,
was
like if we've
probably
actually
just, yeah.
spoken before. I know I met
No, I think
Patrick.
just on online platforms.
Okay, yeah. Yeah,
Like,
well,
right,
it's
I
good to
met
see you
you. So
guys.
it's good to meet you. I mean,
Yeah.
I met you in person at Scares of Care. I forget what
I
year. It was like,
remember.
what, 3 years ago, something
It was a
like
while
that.
ago, yep.
Yeah, but I wanted to go to more last year, but new baby, new house. I was like, okay, can't afford that. But yeah, you've been super duper easy to talk to. Goddamn, what are you gonna come up with next? Like, this is super dark, and I'm so stoked for what the Bridges Gate book coming out next year.
Yeah, so that one's dark. I don't think it's quite as it's not grief driven. So it's dark. I think it's a little lighter, at least, compared to In Excess of Dark, it's lighter.
I'm still pumped to read it. Brennan, I got a little guy talking to me. Can you, sorry, can you?
Hello,
I'm
Phil. How we doing? Yeah, Red, I'll echo that. You're easy to talk to, and you're a force in horror. This episode was long overdue,
yeah,
and I'm
for
glad we
sure.
got to do it about In Excess of Dark. You mentioned, having that kind of content warning, but all more so an author's note about just saying, this is a bleak, dark piece of fiction. And, you know, just make sure you're in the right place for it. It's sometimes there's a nugget of hope in your horror, and this one, you just have to be in the right headspace for it. We've mentioned Eric LaRocca several times. His newest collection, The Skin Was Once Mine, has a very, very similar author's note, just saying, this is dark. This is unrelenting. This is going to take you places. And it's very hard not to just make the comparison between those two pieces of work, whether it's his new one or whether it's Things Have Gotten Worse. And that's, you know, if that's who you're getting compared to, you're doing things right. So
good for you. I am not opposed to that.
Like, yeah, right?
I welcome that comparison.
So thanks for hanging out.
Hopefully I don't
on
disappoint anybody.
No, I think people are going to love it, and they will have already picked it up by the future past this episode airs. So thanks for hanging out.
All right. Thank you.
Everybody, next episode is 240. It's going to be with the author Daniel Brom. We're talking about his upcoming book and a whole lot more. The Main Choices Podcast. Thank you for picking up.